Okay, recording.
Okay. Continuing with the boxed editions produced by the City Museum of Mönchengladbach, I thought I'd show, or talk about rather, the Hanna Darboven box from 1969. Primarily focusing on how the artists considered the box itself. So, like the Panamarenko box, and for that matter, even like the Richter box, Panamarenko choosing to put the, let's just say, more textual material on the outside of the box, top and bottom, and the work, the multiple, occupying the entire inside of the box. And with Richter, combining, the catalog portion of the box is contained inside the bottom part of the box, but underneath the top lid, there is the monochrome painting by Richter. In regards to Darboven, although there is artwork-like elements that are contained in the box, the box itself, you might say, is the this portion of the box appears to be the primary contribution by the artists. The booklet is basically
so the outer wrapper is, you'd consider that to be an artwork by her.
Yeah, I consider the box itself, the image on the top and bottom of the box, to be the piece by her, the multiple, if you will, while the inside of the box contains essentially an exhibition catalog and a sheet of essentially a tablet.
A blank tablet. Why do you think that it's left blank?
To be filled in by the recipient, the owner. Essentially what Darboven has done throughout her career is more or less mark time, her sort of recording of her time on the planet. And you see in her work, primarily works on paper, she's working off tablet-like templates or supports. A lot of mail art was produced by her, and it's essentially working off lined paper as a school notebook might be. In fact, if I'm not incorrect, the book published by the artist book published by Flash Art Editore, titled Information, by Darboven, from 1973. Each page basically is essentially this cursive repeated image on notebook-like paper that essentially approximates a school kid's notebook. So thus the empty notebook.
But in her work, it's the process of filling things up and not leaving too much empty for the viewer to fill up. But mostly just a record of time past. This is time sort of to be filled up by
exactly
someone else.
So I guess you could say that in this case she decided that the owner of this box was to essentially complete the piece. Who knows? I mean, I guess in the end, on these boxes, to know exactly
not
exactly that. You don't even know exactly how much of a contribution the artists has made or not.
Sure.
I mean, you don't know if, for example, this Darboven box is included in the Darboven catalog resume of books. So catalog resume of artist books. So it's clear to me that the artist has considers this to be an artist book by her. Okay. 1969. Okay, it's the sixth item in the catalog resume. So it's clear that she has embraced this box as being part of her of artist books. Okay. But in the case of somebody like Brotars, which is this box here, one of the also most interesting examples, when you review his catalog resume of books and editions, this box does not appear anywhere. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at this box from the outside, it says Figure One, and on the back you have this essay that essentially is the textual matter that's to be found within and as part of this box, okay? Text is in German, so we need to ask your roommate to translate this, although I've had it translated before, and I think it says here that this is the concept of the publication is by Brotars. However, as mentioned a moment ago, it's not included in his catalog resume of artist books and prints.
It's interesting because this one seems so much like a work. As much like a work as the Richter or the
Tamarenko. Yeah.
Because it's a box embedded within a box.
Right. I mean, that isn't why I would say it's more of a... I mean, it just seems like it's a well-thought-out work, mm-hmm. okay? It's not like there's a shell and there's a catalog inside and things,
sure.
the artist may have done, okay? But this is a box that contains another box...
And when we were cataloging this a while ago, I remember that the figure one, figure two, figure three that's on the top of each one of these boxes are alternating top and bottom of each one of these is somehow referring to film.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes. It says, so in sign and film, and yes, it does. But it goes, figure one is the outside of the box. Figure two is the second inside box.
Mm-hmm.
Figure zero... is the third box, and the smallest box is the last box, and that's figure 12, okay? And in addition, every box every box has the same text on the back of it.
In a smaller font, yes. Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah.
It doesn't... No. It's the same.
Oh, it's the same.
It's the same font. It's the same text on each and every, box. Yeah. Only the only difference is on the, essentially, the biggest container. It gives the edition number, and for the following interior boxes, there isn't one. There isn't an edition number stated.
Museum in a box and a sleight of the eye.
Well, it certainly is incorporating the many flourishes of by signature flourishes by this artist.
Yeah.
Okay. How this artist has used the box is completely different from any of the other boxes that we've seen so far in that. The box is really the locus of the work, the box form itself. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's hard for me to understand why this doesn't appear in the Brotars literature. So, especially because the first book. The editions was published in by one of the German by it was a three-part project, but one of the three-part publishing project, but Michael Werner Gallery was one of the publishers. That's the German link, and you know, Cologne is 45 minutes from Mönchengladbach. So it just seems odd that they wouldn't have mentioned this item in the context of that catalog. Another artist that used the box, let's just say more prominently or more primarily, the outside of the box, opposed to the contents, is the collaborative box by Robert Filliou and Georges Brecht. And this is some kind of homage to, if I'm not incorrect, the shop that Brecht and Filliou shared in Villefranche, the south of Italy, excuse me, the south of France, near Nice, all of this, for basically the interior of the catalog is essentially just a catalog. Okay, it basically sets out the works that were included in the show. I guess what you'd I didn't really finish my point about this Sidi place. Brecht and Filliou.
La Sidi was the name of their store.
The whole thing, yeah. And which I, if I remember correctly, the story, which is set out also in one of the Something Else Press books. Basically, everything in the shop had a sedia in the work, thus the name. The book I'm trying to identify is.
For those of us who aren't French speakers.
What does it translate to?
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Let's see if we can find the translation here. The sedia, though, is a some sort of punctuation or it's an accent mark.
Okay. So everything in the store was an accent mark.
But no, it's a specific accent mark. There was a specific accent mark in the work. Yeah, gains at the sedia, or the sedia takes off. Return to New York. Da, 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 da. Games of the Sedia is a compendium of notation, journal, or pen games and other jottings generated by Brecht and Filliou while minding the store with accompanying documentations. And games of the miscellaneous search of gonna proprietor's charming around full of surprises given the parlor games. Text under 1 minute scenario. No, unfortunately. That's something we should know.
To the various reference sources.
Well, we're trying to find out something here. Sedia, a mark placed beneath the letter C in the spelling of French. Okay? So it's a kind of this C marking, C notation underneath, it's essentially what, yeah, Francais. It's a mark that looks essentially like a comma placed beneath the letter C in the spelling of French, Portuguese, and Spanish to indicate that the letter is to be pronounced S, as in the French word garçon. Okay? Mm-hmm. The sedia is also used for various purposes in Turkish and Romanian spelling. Okay?
So it's the image that's on the front of the box.
Exactly. That upside, the upside down question mark.
And then inside, there's a matchbox with the same image with the top on it making a 5.
Right. I can't speak to that except that this is
playfulness.
Yeah, well, it's a ready-made. It's clear that this is a ready-made element.
Oh.
Okay. And, I mean, also knowing that much of the work that was shown in the shop and much of the work done by these artists at that time involved essentially collage. So... but anyway, getting back to the box in this case, this box, you might say it is more work-like than what is contained inside the box, and that the sort of the box itself, which mimics the box of matches, is essentially the what looks like art in this work, opposed to catalog material. Stephen Lieber, hi. Let me call you back. In this case, it seems like the artwork by the artist is to be found the box form itself, opposed to what the contents. And just to confirm that this publication is considered to be an edition by Filiou, let's say, because there's a Filiou catalogue raisonné of editions. This is number 26 in the catalogue raisonné of Filiou.
So you really refer to the catalogue raisonnés as a way to decide whether these were considered artworks by these artists?
Well, I guess it's confirming.
One
way of
yeah.
confirming, because it doesn't necessarily say anywhere on the publication itself that, you know, this or that part of it, or that this is something that was done by the artist. One infers, because one has a general idea of whether or not, I already know, or this set of boxes already been sort of situated within the field of being an artist, multiples, artist books, artist publications, okay, opposed to straight catalog type material. And by noticing what these things look like is also another sort of base indication that these are something that probably was artist informed in some way.
Sure.
But how far it goes is really, I guess, what I alluded to earlier. It's like, well,
you don't really know.
You don't know. It doesn't say, and maybe it's not important, but I mean, to me it is. But I guess to answer your question about looking to the catalogue raisonnés as being of various artists in this group to confirm that these things were done by them.
That makes me think of something that as we're looking into archives in general, that your archive is specific in that you're collecting material that's really generated by the artists, or as much as possible, and that's what you decide is artists' books and artists' ephemera. So, is that also what's interesting? Of course, it's what's interesting about these things, but I wonder if you'd speak a little bit more to the larger archive, or the definition of the larger archive, what's most interesting to you?
Well, I'm more interested in the publications, the artworks, the material that is somehow generated by the artists. However, this archive, this collection, and the archive component of it, doesn't work without having a little bit of both things, or a lot of both things. In that we continually are looking towards reference material for collation purposes, to even just know what things are in many cases. When I had purchased in the 80s this Jeff Berner collection, essentially 18 oversized banker's boxes, like I guess they were more 2.5 times the size of a banker's box. There were some kind of storage box. There was mixed material in these boxes. One box might contain a multiple, 10 multiples, some mail art, a couple catalogs, folded posters, 50 copies of something that he picked up, in a gallery for free. You know, 50 Filiu invitation cards, for example. There was a show that he went to that he picked up that many copies of it. And the process of determining what that what the sort of block of material was,
uh-huh,
required of me a library that was along the lines of this plus something even better. When we were cataloging this material during that period, Jennifer Case was cataloging that material with me. We were looking towards the Codex. We were looking at Fluxus Codex. We were looking to the various other Silverman catalogs. We were generally looking at Zome. We were generally looking at, you know, the Zome Archive catalogs and the Happenings in Fluxus book, also from the I think it's Kölner Kunstverein or the Cologne Kunsthal, one of the two. In any case, we were looking to those books for help all the time, in that there were so many examples of things that after five times, seven times sifting through the stuff in the same box, it wasn't until like a month before that this material was actually being considered by the Walker Art Center as one copy of everything that we had at that moment. It wasn't until that seventh review of the material that we determined that we found out that isolated the fact that, well, I've looked at this 50 times or how many ever times, and I realize now that that's a mail artwork by Robin Page. I mean, it was primarily our thickness and not being able to isolate these things on a once through and having a visual memory of what appears in all this all the other source material. But we absolutely needed the sort of general reference material to make sense of what we've got. So to answer your question, and that took a long time to get to at some point, but
they're both interdependent.
Yeah,
is what you're saying. I mean, you wouldn't be able to know that it's generated by the artist unless you had this reference material to look to at least get a frame.
Exactly, because to a certain extent, in art, there are many examples where you look at something, and because designers are so fantastic at a certain moment or continue to be, that you realize that they're mimicking the artist. I mean, that you don't know where the artist starts and ends. I mean, there are many examples when I was working on that Artist Ephemera show, I had a discussion with Jean-Noël Erlin, and he suggested to me that possibly my parameters weren't exactly right on, or didn't necessarily make a lot of sense to him, because he felt like, in the case for Castelli posters, that there are examples where, you know, there was something given over by the artist, but then the designer basically completes it, and in some cases, maybe more. So he was citing examples of like a Twombly poster that we included in that publication, etc. So there is a moment in time, or maybe always, where you've got a designer that understands the work of an artist and is able essentially to mimic it, so that so without some sort of confirming source, you actually don't really know if the artist did it. I mean, you could say that it is that open. Anyway, I find it all to be crucial. I mean, we look at the artist files here for, you know, articles that, I mean, if there were some particularly good articles on artist magazines that were published in Art Forum, like one per year. One was on Interfunction, one was on Avalanche, one was on Artright, and those are photocopied and put in an artist file. And we look at those things. I've looked at those things in more than one case to determine dates of things or this or that. So, yeah, we use everything here. Even the lowliest announcement card can sometimes glean important information for us. Anyway, This is a box produced by the artists typically associated with Arte Povera, Yanis Kounellis. And this is this example is it was a multiple produced by Kounellis, and it's absolutely clear where the art resides, and that is on the inside of the box. There is a multiple, and it's essentially this object to be ignited. It contains I wouldn't call fireworks, but there is this strip right here essentially is ignitable, and I guess this is an object to be completed by the mm-hmm. purchaser. Mm-hmm. I've seen copies of this being available through a dealer in Mönchengladbach, Gallery Laurel, who had, you know, at various times a number of these boxes, which I purchased, and there were examples where the object was ignited. Yeah.
Yeah. When I first cataloged this book, this piece, it looks very bland. Mm-hmm. But then when you see them after they're ignited, because what it is it's a piece of something that, you know, can be lit on fire, attached to a plaster or something with paper over the top of it. So you light one end and then it fuses all the way up to the top of this strip, and then it makes this incredible, beautiful burn pattern out of the paper and the plaster, and probably forms this really beautiful, dimensional, colorful, you know, work made by fire. And it's just an interesting thing that you know, the artist has taken something, a process that works for them, and making, you know, Yanis Kounellis making this work, and then giving it over so that anyone can make this work. All you need are these, you know, basic elements. So it's like, it's kind of joyful work.
This support is basically some sort of fiberboard.
Okay.
And what I see is the material on top of the fiberboard is something along the lines of even maybe cigarette paper.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got this material to be ignited inside it. And this box was published in 78, but there was another box, not a box, but there was another work that this is actually done after, if you will. And it's the sixth work from his editions book, and it's from 74. It's much larger, and it's identified as untitled, as is this. But the materials are asbestos, glassine, and phosphorus to be ignited. Edition of 80, published by Piemonte in Rome. So anyway,
since it's untitled, you have no idea what this item is unless you go to this book and do some research. Unless it probably says in German.
I'm actually not positive if it does say it in German, because there seems to be a poem here by Alexander Bloch called De Skythen or something. I'm saying it wrong. Maybe this does have some sort of maybe it relates in some way to maybe the poem concerns fire or pyrotechnics burning something, although I can't speak to that. No, there isn't anything inside the box that suggests that this box is to be ignited. Skythen.
So it could be a very insider, you know, instruction, or it might be really available. We don't really know.
Yeah, well, no matter what, it's not clear. It's not absolutely clear that you would know that this is to be ignited unless you got a little bit of help.
Yeah.
Anyway, time I take these out then. scares me a little bit, getting damaged. A few others.
Okay.
The box by Lawrence Wiener. He's used the box primarily, the box form itself, primarily as a container. And inside the box, one finds what I consider to be standard material generated by Lawrence for a museum or gallery exhibition when he has his way. And that is what he's presented here, besides the short catalog essay that Clauters has published, as Clauters has written. You have inside an artist book, which Lawrence Wiener has made, you know, 40, 50 of at this point in time.
Is this the same as he's outside of the box, or was it specific to this?
Okay.
The box.
No.
A primer.
Is the title of the book. Was not published. It was not published for this particular box,
mm-hmm.
To my knowledge. This book was published on the occasion of Documenta 5 from 1972. For all I know, maybe the museum in Mönchengladbach maybe they paid into it partially for to get a certain number of copies for the edition. However, that's pure conjecture because it's not noted in the copyright information.
And this is an edition of
It's an edition of
330.
Yeah, 330 copies.
It's
230. And this book was done in an edition of 2,000 copies in 1972. This exhibition took place in October of 73, so essentially a whole year later. So this is one component of the box. The second component is this poster conceived and designed by Lawrence Wiener, which sets out the eight works that were shown. Quite standard for Lawrence Wiener to have produced a poster. There's a catalogue raisonné of artist books by him. There's also a catalogue raisonné of posters. The most recent exhibition at the Whitney, surveying his work, presented, you know, probably near 100 posters on one wall by him. So this is clearly one of his primary means of presenting work, and these were the pieces that were shown at the during the exhibition. How these works were presented during the exhibition, I can't speak to because I've never seen photographs, because it's hypothetically possible that the works may have appeared in this form alone. Okay, for example, his exhibition, a later exhibition of his done at Art and Project, the bulletin form that he used in that case, the Art and Project bulletin form that he used for that show, was an oversized, a double-sized bulletin, that bulletin essentially carried, contained work, you might say, and was an element in the show. What they did was they plastered one or two copies of this poster on a central beam and kind of had a barrier around the beam, like you'd put in front of an important artwork, and that was one of the that was the means of presentation of the work in that for that exhibition. So as I said, I don't know how this was used, but at minimum, this is what he presented within the form within the box. It also reproduces the text the eight works, yes.
Because, I mean, it's when I was reading the poster, you know, one of these is fire crammed, engorged, glutted, overindulged, with wood crackling, fire fed by other than wood, another log on the fire. It's, you know, the exhibition is almost contained in the box because it's conceptual anyway, so you could almost get the essence of the whole exhibition by just having the box.
I would say that's true.
I mean, that was probably his intention.
I would say that's true, especially at this time, where the work was far less installationally installationally emphasized. You see exhibitions of his work over the last 10 years, and the amount of design, or the design equation, or the design factor in these exhibitions has shifted substantially.
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't say it overrides the message, you know, the statement, but certainly there's more of a competition than there ever was. I mean, an early presentation, I mean, basically you can present the early tenets of the work, or the early structure of the work, which he either, one imagines that he still abides to this, like, structure. The early emphasis is really about, in regards to presentation, it's pretty much however you want it. It's entirely however you want to present it. You present it. That is the statement, or that is the work itself. How you want to present it to the world is pretty much to be presented by presented by the presenter, or the receiver, I guess is how
he puts
it.
The gallery,
or the owner.
Lecture.
Yeah, exactly. So that an early work by him would have easily very understandably presented in crayon on the front of your refrigerator, written by your 10-year-old son. Hopefully, got the spelling right. But I mean, that would really be okay presentation of the work by the artists at that time. Now, despite the fact that you see his basic terms stated over and over again in every exhibition, certainly in the survey show, you see this the same statement repeated over and over again, and I'm under the impression that he still goes by that. But when you see a show now, the work comes off as so designed. I can't even emphasize that enough. Just to repeat this famous phrase, which I should have memorized by now: the artist may construct the work may be fabricated, the work need not be built. Each being equal and consistent with the intent of the artist, the decision as to condition rests with the receiver upon the occasion of receivership. Okay? I mean, in the end, in terms of the, it doesn't matter to the artist, especially at this point, I guess, going forward, that this work be fabricated, that it needs to go, you know, on the wall, or there needs to be, it needs to be incised into some bronze and placed in a square in some city, or in your backyard. The work need not be built, each being consistent, and then the rest with the occasion. Anyway, this package, this small box, certainly transmits the nature of this work as well as any other presentation by the artist. I mean, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Another box worthy of mention is this box by Carl Andre, and unlike some of these other boxes, it is a little bit different in that the top is see-through, and it's just a different type of box than many of the others that we've already investigated. This being also an earlier one, this is probably one of the first five. It's from 68, maybe the first three. And in
feels a little bit more like that first Boys with the layers and material. And...
Right. Except the box itself, though, is quite different from the Boys, but the physical box. But in terms of the content is residing inside the box. There is no not the box itself. And instead of there being any text written by Clodders, the text is written by the artist himself, Carl Andre, where he more or less interviews himself. Mm-hmm. And it's written in his hand, which is quite distinctive. So that's one element, and it's kind of contained in a folder. And the other element that we see is this table runner, this white table runner, 400 centimeters long, 16 centimeters across. And outside of the first fold worth, more or less the first fold worth, which is basically 7.5 inches.
So it's folded accordion, so it's only about 6 inches wide and it runs really long.
Yeah.
And what does it mean?
Well, I think the only way that I understand this is the folds are approximately equal in size, and essentially it's this table runner that has these built-in folds that function in a kind of serial fashion like his work.
Uh-huh.
Okay? And I mean, the material, I mean, obviously this artist is not known for working.
You're getting rectangles.
Yeah, which you're getting this repeated form over and over again, which I guess you don't need to put this on a table. This could also go on the floor, and the marks that the folds have sort of built in, kind of, you essentially see this repeated form over and over and over and over again for the full length of the piece, 400 centimeters up and down. So I see this as functioning as a kind of minimal sculpture, essentially.
Sure.
But it's the fact that the folds are equidistant and repeated is the crucial detail that makes it a kind of serial work.
Could you hold it up a little bit more? Okay. And down a little bit. Thanks. Okay, perfect.
Okay. another box that's one of the more interesting to me, however, I've never fully presented it, is this box by James Lee Byers. And this box, first of all, is completely different in size than any of the other boxes, in that it's essentially twice the size of the regular size boxes. And it's painted all gold. And essentially, inside this box, which you would really not, I don't think you'd know unless you had seen it previously, inside this box contains black crepe paper, which shouldn't surprise anybody familiar with certain aspects of the artist's work. However,
the inside and outside of the box are completely
gold,
covered in gold.
Right, which also is, you know, signature coating by this artist, who's working primarily in gold
in red, in black. That's his sort of repertoire of colors. In any case, you have this piece of black crepe paper inside crepe paper. And although we're not going to take it out of the box, you should know that this actually crushes down. This is a rather large sheet, is what I'm trying to say.
And the shape of it is.
It's essentially a horizontal format piece that's approximately the size of maybe 1.5 times size this print cabinet. And in
so
the
it's
center,
about 10 feet.
Maybe I'm not exactly positive. Well, we could maybe find out. But inside,
so you've never uncrumpled this.
I've never uncrumpled that copy, but I've seen it in an exhibition that was organized by the Museum Westerberg in Bremen on Bayer's ephemera and printed material, and brought Bayer's editions, books, and ephemera. And it surprised me that this box is as large and as spectacular as it is. I mean, it's really mind-blowing. 77, so it's not in the book objects. Editions and multiples, 77. First totally, yeah, this is it. So the size of the paper is 50 by 500 centimeters. Can you do the computation?
Yeah. 245.
Actually,
centimeters is 196 inches.
So it's more than 10 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's an extremely large work that's contained in this box.
Is 16 feet.
16
so
feet. So it's really...
And 50. So yeah, it's a really long...
It's really an extraordinary rectangle thing. Anyway, that you would never know otherwise if you hadn't...
So I'll put that one away.
Anyway, one would never know.
And buyers would have preferred this to be used uncrumpled?
I
or you know, like performed around? Or is it a ceremony?
I can't speak to that. I have no idea.
Uh-huh.
It just is a much more spectacular item than one would imagine when looking at it in the box like this. I guess
would imagine that seeing these exhibitions would also make these boxes that much cooler.
Yeah.
Because you would have this real way to re-experience it. Mm-hmm. If you really liked it.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen an exhibition of just this set of boxes. But like the example of seeing SMS as a show, which I have seen, this set of boxes, although to a certain extent more limited, would be a fantastic exhibition. And again, a very interesting glimpse of art of that moment in time. I mean, this guy Clotters certainly emphasized or was more interested in artists associated with conceptual art than art de pauvre, minimal art, than post-minimalism, than, let's just say, the next guy. But it is a quite strong selection, and some of the contributions are
I don't know. I mean, I think they're really fantastic. This being one of the more spectacular ones. Many of these other works, I would say, are of a more modest nature in size, and this is kind of going over the top in the opposite direction. As previously mentioned, there are a fair number of boxes from this series, which, from my perspective, are simply exhibition catalogs. The box on rational speculation is a just straightforward exhibition catalog.
There were a couple that, like that one is a group show.
Right.
There are a couple that are group shows that maybe would have made more sense for Clouders and his team to just design that.
Exactly. Yeah.
Make it pretty conventional.
Right.
I mean, it's not still in a box and it's still in this series, but...
Right. In general, I would say that the majority of these boxes are artist projects, even if on first glance they may not appear that way. I mean, a good example of a box where I'm under the impression that the artist had nothing to do with it, which you might think oppositely, or the opposite is the John's box, Jasper John's, which does kind of come out of the blue here. When you think about the collection of these boxes, I mean, it's decidedly a European perspective, first of all, of what the selection is made of. Even if American artists were included, so with the American artists...
Yeah, you've got Daniel Buren and Darboven and
right.
Rotars and Ruthenbeck.
Right, but when you think about the American artists that they showed, you have Joel Fisher... Okay,
uh-huh.
You have Brecht, you've got Lawrence Wiener, Carl Andre, James Lee Byers, and Johns. That's the full group of American artists. Well, when you realize that Andre, Byers, Wiener, and Joel Fisher were substantially more often and exhibiting in Europe than they were in America.
Huh.
I mean... Lawrence Wiener at that time was showing at a minimum of 5-6 European galleries every year. He was showing at Jack Wendler in London. He was showing at Arten Project in Amsterdam. He was showing at Yvon Lambert in Paris. He was showing at Speroni in Rome. He was showing at Toselli in Milano, etc. So,
mm-hmm.
The same thing with Andre. His first show was at, an early show of his, was at Conrad Fischer in Dusseldorf. As you know, that the Conception show that Clouders worked on with, I guess he worked with Rolf Vetiver. So, not Conrad Fischer, but Conrad Fischer was certainly consulted. In any case, and Dusseldorf is like 12 minutes by car from Mönchengladbach. So it just doesn't surprise me that these artists that are American showed up in this series that would be showing it there. Because they're artists
neighbors.
That were kind of, they basically showed substantially in Europe. This is the only example where it kind of doesn't fit. Jasper Johns, who wasn't often showing in Europe. To my knowledge, Johns didn't do... This box wasn't done by Johns. This was a sort of design project. I only note that in that it's not mentioned anywhere in the catalog resume. And
mm-hmm.
When I asked Richard Field at some point in the past whether or not... Johns had produced any posters for
Take Care of Johns' archive.
Richard Field wrote the catalog resume of the graphic works.
Oh, okay.
And and is a art historian, was teaching at Yale. I think he's retired now. But in any case, he said to me that based on his research, John's didn't really work outside of, you know, painting, drawing, some multiples that were published by regular publishers like ULAE, and the prints. Okay, so even posters, he didn't do. So,
so this one is really a stretch.
Yeah, that, to me, this is clearly not done by the artists. Okay? I guess for the rest, I think for the rest, the more or less much of the same that I've already said holds true. In that the contributions are mixed, that there's artist books included here. There's a record work by Rutenbeck, but there's a print by Schönhoven included here. Poster works by Hirich and Hoffner, ditto poster work. But in general, these boxes were they contained either multiples or artist books, and yeah, I think you got a tour of these boxes pretty much today.
Yeah, and we've modeled our last catalog after one of these boxes.
It's true. The Paolini publication, the Paolini Mönchengladbach is the sort of model for our catalog that was produced on the occasion of the last New York Art Book Fair.